some flavor that looks a lot like a very small number of IDs, maybe even just one, being provided out to clients. At the same time, there's a large number of caches, potentially all of the caches, advertising reachability to those IPs, usually through some routing protocol. BGP is a pretty common one. In the basic model, the network distributes the traffic as it sees fit. So as the CDN, I don't really have control over which cache is going to receive that traffic. It's kind of up to the network, which if you have that very centralized model that I showed a few slides ago, actually works out pretty well. But once you start getting lumpy, it really breaks down fast. In more advanced models, you can start to use routing attributes like BGP local pref or AS path prepending or all sorts of meds is a good example to start distributing some of that traffic in a more controlled way, allowing you to inform the network of where you want the traffic to go, both in steady state and then if something fails, where you want that traffic to go. But again, there's complexity price that you pay with doing that. So this is the visual of that. So basically, two sites, four caches in each site. All caches are advertising this v6 address. And then from the client perspective, regardless of what the client asks for, they get that IP. So either if it's a DNS lookup or they're getting a 302 redirect, they always get that same IP. So all of these clients are trying to go to the same IP, and all of these caches are advertising that IP, which means you're going to non-deterministically spread that traffic. So client one may go to cache one here, client one may go to cache two here, but they're going to the closest to them. This is kind of the simple model, pure Anycast, no real magic.
Yeah, so I'm not super familiar with your midterm model. Are your two sites in this kind of regional area connected by a backbone? I mean, earlier your slide, you said that they were kind of close to each other, right?
Sure. So in this case, they're within the same regional network. We call them CRANs, but you could kind of imagine a backbone up here that would connect other regional area networks. There are other slides that are coming up to show what happens when there are multiple of these regional areas.
You said it was easier for load balancing. I assume because site one and it shifts some stuff off the back to site two if it gets overloaded?
Yep, exactly.
Florida, South Carolina, and Boston as edge groups, and Eastern U.S. as a mid-tier group, for example.
But even within a CRAN, with our regional network, you'll have a multitude of sites in there. And then each one of those sites is kind of connected in a big ring, and then we've got backbone links going out for the regional network.
And the idea here is your customers are well-distributed enough so this basically works. You might end up with 55%, 45% in steady state, but as long as you've got enough capacity between the two, you're fine. And that's where you start accounting for failover and why having the same number in each site makes that failover a lot simpler. I'm going to knock this thing over. Okay, so that's traditional Anycast. It's the simplest model, but also offers you the least control, and some of the problems that we've talked about become more and more pressing. Okay, the next model we've been discussing is resilient for Anycast, and this one is the most complicated. And it's actually really, that point is really important because it shows just how difficult integrating Anycast into an existing CDN is. And this is actually the thing that gets us the most value, but it's the most difficult to implement. Most complicated to probably develop on, probably the most difficult to troubleshoot on, but it's the thing we need to do. So the intent of resilient Anycast is to get convergence as fast as the network can go. So networks tend to converge in the order of tens to hundreds of milliseconds, whereas if you're leaving it up to, you know, getting to the ATC control plane and all the DNS problems, this is measured in potentially minutes or tens of minutes for failover. So hundreds of milliseconds, good, but we got to do it. So the concept we're going to talk about today with resilient Anycast is the idea of caches advertising two different types of routes. And the reason why there's two different types of routes is one type of routes allows traffic router to control where traffic is going. And those are distinct routes. And what I mean by that is if you have eight caches, they're all advertising different distinct routes. And because of that, traffic router can pick where it's sending that traffic. So if server one's a little underutilized, it can send a little more over there. The second set of addresses is common addresses, which means if you have eight caches, they're all advertising the same set of routes. And what that does is that allows for orchestrated route withdrawal. So if we go back to let's see, this slide, for example, let's say we didn't have enough capacity at all. We were 100% or 105% overutilized across this entire regional area network. Any cache left to its own devices, as long as one of these caches is advertising that route, it's going to eat all that traffic. To solve that problem, what you need is orchestrated route removal. All 8 of these caches have to withdraw the same route for traffic to actually leave the regional area and go to the backbone. They all have to drop that route. So that's the purpose of the common routes. So the common routes basically allow the caches to all say, I'm going to drop these routes, and that traffic has to leave. So it allows you to eject traffic from the CRAN. So the first set, distinct routes, allows traffic router to do its thing. And the second set allows the network to very quickly take action in overutilization conditions. The ratio between those two is basically how much you want to prefer traffic balancing, what traffic router is going to do, versus the ability to eject traffic. And where you set that line basically gives you either more control or more ability to eject traffic. So this is an example of how overflow traffic would work. So let's say we've got 2 regional area networks. There you go. Connected by a backbone that's right here. In this case, we've got a bunch of clients going to caches here, a bunch of clients going to caches there. And what we want is the ability to send traffic from regional area 1 to regional area 2 if regional area 1 is overutilized. So the way we solve that problem is, while caches have enough capacity, they advertise an aggregate route. So before we were showing those the common routes. So let's say this site starts to get overutilized. What it can start doing is reducing the number of those common routes that it's advertising, just starting at the top. Eventually, you'll get to a point where none of those 8 caches are advertising a prefix. So traffic will actually go out over the backbone and find the next closest region that is advertising those routes. And basically what you're doing is by advertising the aggregate route, you are advertising the desire to take overload traffic if necessary. So as long as I'm advertising the aggregate, I'm telling the rest of the network, if you're overloaded, send traffic to me. If I become overloaded, I stop advertising the aggregate, which tells the rest of the network, don't send any extra traffic to me. So basically what happens is this traffic will kind of keep failing over until it finds a home, which is where it finds a site that has the capacity it needs. That was a long way of explaining what these next slides show. So in this example, we'll say steady state. We're going to say there's 600 routes. 400 of those routes are unique, which means they're only advertised out of a single cache. So this 60 is different than this 45, 80. Those are all different unique routes. At the same time, they're all also advertising the same 200 routes. So this means out of the 600 routes, 400 are unique and 200 are common. This means I have 66% of my traffic allows me to balance. So that's basically given to traffic router and says, traffic router, you make sure you're balancing these 66% of the routes. The other 33% is not controlled by traffic router, and it's up to the caches to decide how many of those they're advertising. The advantage to this mechanism is because I'm advertising some number of unique routes, I can even be unbalanced within my CRAN intentionally. Say I've got some older caches and I've got some brand new ones that can do triple the load. The ones that can do triple the load, maybe I have them advertise more unique routes. So I can even do uneven balancing within a CRAN. Okay, so in this case, no failures. Everyone's advertising all the routes. We're all happy. Everyone's advertising both the unique and common aggregates, which means they're able to take on additional load. If necessary, I'm signaling to the network, I can take on additional load. So everything's fine. So let's say we lose a cache. So in this case, cache 1 fails. What's going to happen is, because it's failed, both the unique routes and common routes go away. So it's lost all of the unique routes, and that traffic's going to split up evenly across the remaining 7 caches because they're advertising the unique aggregate. So that traffic's going to split fairly evenly, but non-deterministically. The common routes, the same problem, the same thing's going to happen. I lose all 200 coming from that cache, and that traffic's going to split amongst the other 7 because of the common aggregate route. I'm going to knock it over. It's going to happen. Okay, so that's failure. Failure is kind of simple because the routes just go away. Networks do network things, and everything works. Things get a little more tricky when you want to start shifting a little bit of traffic. So no caches are down, but they're all getting pretty hot. So we go from that mode where we were stable and everything's fine to we're overloaded. And in this case, we want any cache to fix things quickly rather than waiting for traffic router to have to catch up. So in this case, what's going to happen is you're going to start seeing the common routes get dropped first. So literally just starting at the top of the list, cache one says, ooh, I'm overloaded. I'm going to start withdrawing some of these common routes. At that point, traffic's going to fail over to cache two, and cache two is going to say, I'm overloaded too. Start withdrawing some of my routes. Start withdrawing some of my routes. Start withdrawing. Finally, you might find a home. In other words, there's a cache that still has enough capacity to take on what's left these ones. And you will go until you find that home. Note that while you're doing that, once you've gone into overload mode, you stop advertising the common. So I'm no longer advertising to the network that I can take additional traffic. This guy, when the traffic got to this one here, number six, it was able to handle that traffic, so it's still advertising the aggregate route. Do you have a question?
Yeah, so as for withdrawing routes, I mean, that's killing active connections, right?
It's moving them.
Yes, it's TCP reset.
You get a reset.
Yeah, it will, TCP reset. But it kills the active connection.
It does. So this tends to be more well used for things like very small downloads. Video is a good example of that, ADR, where the penalty of having to restart the connection is minimal. The idea is you're far enough ahead of your buffer, you don't know or care.
Yeah.
But yeah, you do have to eat the reset. Okay, so in this case, we found that we have enough capacity within the site, and we're kind of in a good place. Now we keep going, and maybe there's more and more traffic coming in. So in this case, everyone's overloaded. And what happens is that everybody drops their common routes down to zero. So in this case, all of the traffic that was going to these common routes has now left the site. It's being shunted over to another site that has enough capacity to handle this. And this has been done with the orchestrated withdrawal of the common routes. So all that traffic's gone. And because we're overloaded, we stop advertising the common. But we still advertise the unique because we still have enough unique route capacity. So we've gotten the load down enough where I can still use my unique routes. Then eventually, what happens is traffic router catches up. And at that point, traffic router is going to say, hey, routers, you're still overloaded for whatever reason. I need you to stop advertising some of your unique routes. And at that point, I'm not advertising either of my aggregates because none of my caches can take any more traffic. And all of the common traffic is going to another site. And even a percentage of the unique traffic is going off to a different site. But this takes traffic router being involved because traffic router controls the unique routes. So basically what this ends up saying is I can very quickly move traffic off. It's in the common route area. And then to get into this unique route area, I need to start getting traffic router involved. But because it's any cache, you still don't have the DNS sticky problem. I can withdraw these routes, this traffic goes to a different site, and save the TCP reset, you're still okay. That was a lot. But it shows just how complicated this needs to be to work with something that already has a control plane. Okay, this brings us to resource-based anycast. And this is my holy grail. This is where I want this to work. So what this does is it attempts to bridge the gap between resources and the network. So right now, and you kind of have an IP address. An IP address represents the ability to get something. But that thing you want could be anything on that cache. It doesn't actually represent a resource. It just represents the ability to get a resource. What this does is it tries to start bridging that gap and saying, rather than an address representing the ability to get something, it represents the thing. So you remove that abstraction layer. Okay, so in this model, traffic router knows which caches are already advertising routes, and it can tell caches to change those routes. And the a benefit of this is now traffic router can start saying, I'm going to start responding to the request for this resource with this IP address. And this IP address actually means that resource. And as that resource gets increasingly popular, traffic router can start telling more caches to advertise reachability to that. So you get this almost automatic dispersion characteristic where low-end, very, very long-tail things maybe don't even get a specific route associated with them. So they're just getting eaten by an aggregate route. Traffic router doesn't really care. then that resource starts to get a little bit more popular. So traffic router says, instead of giving you this default router or aggregate route, I'm going to give you this prefix that just means that content. It's Game of Thrones. This prefix means Game of Thrones. And it knows which caches are advertising that route. And then it can say, wow, Game of Thrones is getting really popular. I need 5 more caches to start advertising that route. So now you can almost get this elastic pool of caches that are willing to serve that content. And then as the requests for that content go down, traffic router can go back out and say, stop advertising that route. So there's a lot of advantages to doing that. Additionally, you automatically get affinity because the route is associated with the content and the route is being advertised by a certain number of caches. You will only ever go to those caches for that thing. So you get automatic affinity.
So when you say resource, is a resource like, in terms of video, like a master manifest? Or is it like every single fragment?
It's anything you want it to be, up to and including a block on disk.
So the reason I'm asking is because, right, in the video world, the client is going to request the master manifest, and then they're going to get this or that resource, and then they're going to hang on to that for the FDDN, right, and they're going to ask for every fragment from the same IP, right?
That's exactly which one.
Right.
You can do both. So you could say that, and you get the master manifest for Game of Thrones, and you get an IP address for that, and therefore you're going to go back to that same cache for every bit of Game of Thrones. You can do that. Or you can even start to get more clever and start putting things in the manifest that even break it down to maybe the chunk level. So instead of having...
By putting the IP in the manifest.
You got it. So it just depends on what you want. The granularity of that route is up to you. A route could represent, and I think I have it on a couple slides from now, a route could represent a chunk, it could represent a service, it could represent an episode, it could represent a series, whatever you want. Okay, so aggregate routes can be used to as a kind of a catch-all in case there's no specifics for that content currently on the network. It can also be used to fail over between sites and also super useful for limiting the size of the routing table. One of the problems with doing this is if I gave an IP address to every fragment we have on our CDN, it's going to be a lot of routes and the network team's not going to be super happy with me. So if I use route aggregation most of the time and use specific route advertisements for particularly popular content, the network team's going to be a lot more happy with me. Caches advertising a specific route can be assumed to already have that content cached. And what I mean by that is if I'm a cache and I advertise the Game of Thrones route, should probably assume I already have that content cached. Or at least the second time you ask for it, I definitely will have the content cached. And this is a first step towards the nirvana of actually having everything associated with an IPv6 address, and then you can do a bunch of cool stuff. Okay. So the visual version of this is, got a bunch of clients here, a couple people watching Game of Thrones, Big Bang Theory, This Is Us, and Gilligan's Island. So these two clients that asked for Game of Thrones get the same IP address back, and there are two caches advertising reachability to that address because Game of Thrones is popular, so I wanted the dispersion to be up a little higher. So this client happens to be closer to this cache, this client happens to be closer to this cache, but they're asking for the exact same content with the same IP address. That's Anycast. You've got a couple other clients, Big Bang Theory and This Is Us. They're going to different caches that are advertising the specific routes for those. And then you've got Gilligan's Island here. So Traffic Router is giving out this IP address. You'll note none of these caches are advertising the Gilligan's Island prefix because it's super long tail content. I don't need to burn an IP address on them. This cache happens to be advertising the catch-all for that network. So it's basically saying, if there isn't a specific for this, come to me and I'll handle your request. So this is your catch-all. Maybe it's a server that's specifically designed for long tail content and it's advertising the /64, whereas these ones are more specifically designed to be caching your Game of Thrones and those sorts of things. So you can start playing with all these routing things versus what traffic router is handing out in IPs, and you can start actually breaking up who's caching what simply by what prefixes you're advertising out to the network. This also gives you some amount of failover protection by advertising the aggregate route. If this cache goes away, that traffic is just going to move to this route, to this cache, because it's advertising the aggregate route.
What about when it ramps down?
When it ramps
IP down. Disappears, or I don't know. Is it possible, or
like
if people stop watching?
It was
really popular, and now there's only one watcher.
Yeah, so that to me, that's kind of traffic router's responsibility. So traffic router knows how many people are asking for something. And its job is to tell the network, you could even envision an environment where this guy has not watched Game of Thrones yet. So this cashier is not advertising the Game of Thrones route. So everything's being served by this one. Eventually, too many people are going to be asking for Game of Thrones. Traffic router says, hey, cash over here, you need to start advertising the Game of Thrones route as well. And then the ramp down is the opposite. So traffic starts to come back down. Traffic router can say, hey, cash, stop advertising Game of Thrones. It's over.
Yeah, well, so if this is a butt asset we're talking about, or linear?
Could be either.
Doesn't matter? Okay. So usually you hit the traffic router once, right? So then you stream for an hour.
Yes, but again, if you get into doing clever things with a manifest,
yeah,
you can force a different behavior. Yeah.
I just want to make sure it doesn't withdraw routes while it's streaming, right?
You may end up at a point where the traffic level is dropped far enough where traffic router has decided stop doing that, and those streams would fail over to here.
Yeah.
And you'd be okay. It's just traffic router has decided that traffic could be handled by a
single cache. But then at the beginning of the hour, everybody requests that content, then there's nothing for half hour. But you still have to load on the end of your edge caches.
Sure.
Everything's going to go up there until that one. That was my question. Wouldn't everything go to that top cache for Game of Thrones until that one got overloaded?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So in order for things to go to that bottom cache, would the top one have to stop advertising the route?
You could do that. The maybe better approach would be, this cache knows how much traffic Game of Thrones is serving. So it could say, hey, traffic router,
heads up.
You may want to have this guy over here start advertising Game of Thrones. So you'd get a feedback loop of what the traffic... And the nice part is, because the traffic is associated with an address, you can actually tell traffic router, tell somebody else to start advertising this.
Yeah.
I need help.
So this would be not like the previous slide where you're pulling out the routes based on load. This would be before you get there, you're actually calling them.
Right, right. You have some threshold says if this goes over blah, help!
Yeah, okay.
But since... in this case, the manifests that are describing the video content are referencing a name or an IP that's based on the content itself, possibly you can ramp up and down where that traffic is actually running without TR's involvement and without the player's knowledge.
You can. But...
Can and should. But it means that if there's a network isolation event, for example, and you lose some of your caches, the players themselves don't need to necessarily go back and talk to somebody different, because by then, hopefully, BGP has reconverged, which has then selected a different target for the anycast route, hopefully.
Yep. And you could even get into a scenario where a cache can decide that I'm getting, these aren't here, and you only have the aggregate. If there's enough traffic going to an aggregate route here, you could end up in a situation where this cache can tell traffic router, hey, this thing that's getting eaten by the aggregate route is getting really popular. You should probably tell these two to start advertising the specific.
Right.
So there's lots of games you can play if you have that bi-directional communication channel.
So I'm guessing this is pretty theoretical at the moment.
my first line said I made all this up.
Talk about the... cache is talking and saying, all right, I've got too much Game of Thrones. Is that something that perhaps a sophisticated analytics system could tell you instead of a cache?
You certainly could envision that world. It doesn't have to be the caches themselves, right? It could be something offline that's collecting the data for this that then instructs traffic router what to do. So you could almost have like a overlay model.
The way you're describing it puts a huge amount of intelligence in the cache, and that's a little scary.
Or traffic monitor.
See, it doesn't have to be anywhere.
Right.
This is the simple model, but may not work in reality.
How are you defining unique versus common?
How? Is that the
question? Like, how do you see that being defined?
I would say you have a...
Is that like, you go in there and you say, this kind of content's going to be unique, this kind of content's going to be common?
Popularity curve.
Like, or is it going to automatically adjust when you move unique into common if there becomes enough request for it?
You can certainly do that.
Like if there's like a Gilligan's Island remake or something, like all of a sudden everyone wants to catch up on it.
That shit.
Yeah. But that's already been advert. But I guess you could, if this cache starts advertising a unique IP for Gilligan's Island, maybe that route will stop applying.
Yeah, so if this guy, say, Gilligan's Island's normally going here, it gets popular.
Yeah.
This guy can start advertising the specific for Gilligan's Island. All that traffic for Gilligan's Island will come here. Right. And it allows you to now have more control over Gilligan's Island.
So it would be the more specific route would win.
And the reverse of that, like no one's watching Game of Thrones anymore, so, like, would that, like, eventually fall back on a default, on a...
an aggregate.
Aggregate route?
Yeah, so you can envision a world where this Game of Thrones falls below a threshold, he stops advertising, now it's all going to him, still not that popular,
right.
He stops advertising, now he's just going to eat all the long tail.
Ah, okay. Because that route already exists.
Yeah, as the aggregate.
And everything, the aggregates contain... Okay, got it.
So you can almost think about it as using the specifics for things that you really want to control where it goes.
And that's...
And anything else, you just go to it.
And that's an any cast thing that it just does? Where it uses the most specific route
possible?
Yes, okay.
So networks by default.
Okay.
And almost unchangeably use the most specific route.
Cool.
So you mentioned large files. So if you have like an 8 gigabyte... speed, some giant asset. How do you handle those resets?
Yeah, you don't. The problem is, networks are volatile, and you really don't want to count on a path to an edge being always there and always the same and always stable. You almost can't do that, especially when you start considering like a global CDN where you're going over peering points and things that are completely out of your control. You almost don't want to do this. That doesn't mean you can't. It just means you have to be willing to eat it if you have to fail over to something else.
How expensive is that? So, or how common is that? So like in video, again, thinking of the video, as we go from 1080p to 4K to 8K or whatever, it seems like the higher you go, the worse it's going to get because the packets aren't getting bigger, or at least not yet.
Yeah, I mean, even in our case, we're 500 milliseconds to deliver even a large chunk, so I think your risk profile goes down in that environment, but yeah, you're talking a new Game of Thrones update, or World of Warcraft update that's 150 gigs?
I guess, could you sort of improve that scenario by slowing down how often you advertise or change your advertising?
You can, but generally those problems aren't caused by you advertising routes, it's by changes in the network. So a peering point in Boston goes down, you now come in Chicago and you go to the Chicago cache, and the CDN had nothing to do with that decision. And that's the more common scenario. Okay, so anycast traffic management when you're doing resource based is actually very similar. We talked about what things you can associate routes with, and basically traffic control is the slow thing, anycast is the fast thing, and you just want to make sure that they don't interfere with each other. That's the moral of the story. Okay. I basically already went through a lot of these things, but basically, anycast is not one size fits all. We're looking at different options. None of them exist today. And IPv6, IPv6, IPv6. I think that's it. Any questions?
Yeah, so these terms, the resilient and the resource-based anycast, is that like something that you came up with?
Yeah, I made it up. If you search for those things, they don't exist yet.
Okay.
But I wanted to make a very clear delineation between the different use cases. And that
makes sense.
And those represent different network configs or different like cache or whoever's advertising?
It's completely up to you. But it's the different model of how you expect to advertise routes and what to happen.
Okay.
So the traditional anycast model doesn't have that common versus unique thing. So you don't have the controls that
right.
provides you.
But that's all. Like I'm more asking, like, what if I don't control the network?
If you don't control the network, it's a lot harder.
Okay.
But okay. most people who will sell you a connection and a BGP session support all the things you need to do this.
Okay.
No one that you're buying a BGP session from is going to tell you you can't use local prof. That's
okay.
just a standard thing.
Yeah.
So you should be able to do it. I'm not going to guarantee it.
Okay.
Keep it on your own network.
Okay.
I had another question about the middle option. If you could go back to that slide.
Yep.
Of the two different types of routes. Yeah, that one. So was there a technical difference? I might have just missed this. Was there a technical difference in unique versus common routes?
No, just that.
Just how many you're doing?
Just how many you're doing, and traffic router controls the distinct. The network controls the common.
Okay. but in terms of them being published, they're technically the same?
Or really, the caches control the content.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Okay.
Would the unique routes tend to be more intended for more local clients to be connecting through? Or...
No, you want local... In steady state, you want basically an even split here. Of who's... You know, the 600 routes, you want... what's the math on that? 0.16. Yeah. 0.16% of the traffic goes to each one of those 600. In steady state.
In my IPv6 is right. Published as CIDRs? Like, are these published as one group? Or
it doesn't matter as long as they're within the aggregates. So how you spread those 60 within that aggregate doesn't matter as long as they're all within the aggregate, because that's your failover mechanism.
So if there are 600 clients and 600 routes, that would mean, in the ideal world there would be, like for cache 1, there would be 60 plus 200 divided by 8 on cache 1.
You got it.
Okay.
You got it.
And unique routes might be used to ensure that the content is on that cache, right?
Yes, because with these you have no guarantee.
Right.
So this might be your longer tail content.
Right.
And this might be your Game of Thrones in this model. But you can do it however you want. I'm not being prescriptive.
Or regional programming could be unique. Okay.
Yeah, and that's your nationals.
Okay.
Yep.
The unique routes still leverage consistent hash for selection purposes.
Yes.
But the common routes in this case no longer do.
Right. You're really at the network's mercy on how this gets distributed.
So are those really cache groups instead of caches on the line?
Could do it like that too.
Okay.
But you could... The size of the thing doesn't matter.
You're right. Well, outside of the fact that consistent hash doesn't get used if there's only one cache.
Mm. Fair. Yeah?
Well, it's consistent. So it's used every time.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks, Jamie. Cool.